I was working down in McIlvany's, the courthouse bar, that evening when the bomb went off. I was filling petrol outside, and the bomb went off, and if I saw the wee cafe, it just, the roof lifted up in the air and dropped down again, and all the windows and that were blown out, and there was glass everywhere, and I got hit on the head with something. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was glass, and went up to the hospital, and they checked it and they took it out, and it was a lump of steel, a lump of wire, about 3 inches long, was stuck in the side of my head. So they took that out and let me go. There was no problem. Like, there was no, and I went to the pub after that then and had a few beers before I went home.
Less than an hour and a half after three car bomb explosions in Dublin, a fourth loaded car parks outside Greeson's pub in the centre of Monaghan town. It's another busy Friday evening. What happens next is told by the people of Monaghan.
Until the bomb hit, it was almost like Monaghan was untouchable. You know, it was a little safe hideaway. And even though there were some acts of violence prior to that, I know in 72 and whatever, but Monaghan town itself had never really been affected. And May 17, 74 changed that. I think the town started changing after that. That element of safety and security, that was gone.
It was a very wet day. I can remember particularly the evening because it was sort of... I remember the boys were supposed to be playing a match, and it was a bad evening for a match, and also I can remember it was a wet evening, you know.
So my name is Brendan White, and I am the oldest son of Margaret White, Peggy White. And so, yeah, we lived up in Belgium Park, and I was 13 at the time. So I was in the front room of our house. As a matter of fact, that night, my mother went down to work, and I used to go down to help her at Greeson. She worked up in the sandwich bar up above. And that particular evening, she asked me to come, and I said, no, I had a football game in the park the next day, and I knew if I didn't get my homework done, I wouldn't be able to play the game. So I didn't go. So my dad, he was at the house at the time, and he heard that I wasn't going. So he said to my mum, he said, well, listen, I'll meet you over at the pub at 7 and keep you company, because the buses didn't come in till about 7:30 or 7:45, but she had to open at 7.
My name's John McQuaid, born and reared in Monaghan, still a native of Monaghan. And on that day of the bomb, I was standing at Black's Corner, across the road from actually where the bomb car was. A man stopped to talk to me. That man's name was Tommy Crokin. Tommy was going home to T. Holland, and he says to me, I'm going to Jack McLone's. There was a wee cafe there in the middle of the square, and he says, beside the monument, he says, I'm going to Jack McLone's to get a feed. Come on over with me, John, and we'll get two feeds. And he says, Jesus, Tommy, I can't go because today I'm going into work, which would have been the Ulster Arms bar just across the road from it there.
My name's Jimmy Crokin. My father's brother, Tommy, was unfortunately killed in the bomb. Tommy was a very, very quiet man. He lived at home alone with the mother out in T. Holland. Same routine every week, just the Rossmore furniture factory that he worked in, and that was his wee in for a pint, probably in the Ulster Arms, waiting for the 7 o'clock bus or the 7:30 bus to T. Holland, and that was his daily chore down to live with Mammy, and that was Tommy. Kept very much to himself. There's not even a photograph of Tommy. There was one photograph, I think, that they have in the book. Was the only photograph that was ever taken of him. That's how quiet he was.
I met another man, a man called Tommy Campbell. And he says, are you going into work, John? He says, I am. He says, I was in there looking to get a cheque changed, a marked cheque. And I says, Jesus, Tommy, I haven't got the keys of the safe at the minute. And Peter has the keys. He says, I was in there looking for him and he's not there. I'll go to Greason's and get the check changed. And I says, fair enough, Tommy. I says, I'll see you later.
My name's Dominic Meehan. I would have been very much involved out of my uncle's farm in Tay Holland. And while working on that farm, Thomas Campbell was a relation of ours who worked and helped my uncles out on the farm. Tommy Campbell was going to get the bus, the 7 o'clock bus. Now, Tommy Campbell's business that day in Monaghan was to get his mother's pension.
My name's Austin McCardle, and I was 15 years of age at the time. So we were coming into town after finishing work. Paul was an electrician. He was doing some work on the plant, and we got it finished, and we came back into town. And coming down past the post office, came to a stop, as normal. It's a stop sign. Didn't know if they were going to turn right, go straight, or what they were doing, but I was in the middle of the back seat of the car.
And around about 5 to 7, it was a miserable old evening. It was like old fine rain, so it was. And Greason's were they had the pub there. And my car was sitting just right behind, and the car was in front of me with the bomb in it, and I didn't know. Dad would have seen that in the news in the pub, because, you know, because I was down in the credit union, and I could see the television, and it was up in the news about the Dublin bombing. There was a right few killed in it. So there was, you know, but didn't realise that we were the next victims, Monaghan.
So we were aware that evening that a number of bombs had gone off in Dublin. What I do recollect, I was talking to my mother and saying to my mother, that's a terrible thing that's happened in Dublin.
My name's Enda Galligan. I would have been around 14 years of age at the time. And I had come home and parked my bike just outside the front door. And went in and had something to eat. And then I sat down to watch my favourite programme. Can't believe I'm admitting that Crossroads, which was a TV series on UTV, was a big favourite programme of mine. But that's what I did, 6:30. Sat down to watch the TV programme. Crossroads was always finished at 7:03.
Meg Richardson was leaving Crossroads, and her son in the part was actually in a wheelchair, and Meg Richardson was leaving in the car going down the driveway, and the theme tune was Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Three.
And that Friday evening at exactly 7:03, the credits started to roll at the end of the programme, and just as the credits rolled, there was this almighty boom.
So just at that, the bomb exploded. And the first thing I noticed was a blue flash. There was a flash, followed by a bang, severe explosion.
Just directly behind the TV was our kitchen window, and the window started to shake. And it was a sound that I had never heard before.
I remember sitting watching television in the house, drinking Coca-Cola out of a big bottle. And then there was just some very loud bang outside. At which time I got up and walked outside, and there was a big ball of black smoke coming up from the centre of the town.
So I went into the front room and I was doing my homework there, and I remember the window pane in the house started to rattle. Now it was a millisecond, but it just seemed like forever. And I thought, why is the window rattling? And then I heard the explosion. So I walked outside and I saw the smoke coming up, and I knew the town, so I knew the vicinity. Well, both my dad and my mum were downtown.
5 going on 6. I was going to be 6 a couple of months later, a few months later. So I was very, very young. So I just happened to be gazing down towards where the AIB is now. It was then known as Low Pattons, with a very large front window. I just happened to be looking down there. And I saw the window just literally melting out of the building. And then, with a slight delay, there was a huge bang. And I remember that bang, a fierce bang.
I walked in behind the bar took off my coat and I was just about prepared to stack a few bottles into the shelf and bang. And the bottles that was in my hand all bursted and some sort of a force drove me through the door, took the door off the hinges and left me laying in the lounge. And I gathered myself, picked myself up, my arm was through the pane of glass on the door, and I says, am I dreaming this? Is this a dream?
And as I got out of the car on the footpath, part of the engine of the bomb car, or some part of the car, landed beside me, about a foot from me. But I followed, instinctively, I followed the driver of the car, and he moved across the footpath, which would be past O'Hanlon's Travel Agency. Now, the footpath would have been a lot narrower at that time, and there was a CIE service bus sitting parked, probably waiting to start. And I fell on top of one of the victims, right? But the man had gone on, but I got up to get off the victim, but I couldn't get away from him. I fell on him twice, and then I got up. Probably shock was starting to set in on me, I'd say.
And just at that, one of the side doors opened, and a boy called Hughie O'Brien opened the door. He says, John, he says, there's a bomb after going off at Grayson's pub. He says, you're joking. And I leapt out over the counter. My ears were ringing now. I could hardly hear anything, but I heard him, and me and him run over to Grayson's pub. And there was a man laying at where the door was, and I maintained that was Tommy Campbell, the man that I was after talking to in that 5 minutes before that. And I could hear this man, for God's sake, somebody help me, somebody help me. So I reached in and cut him by the arm. I don't know where I got the strength from, but I pulled him out through what would have been the window of the pub. I pulled him out through the thing onto the street, and the next thing I could hear somebody else screaming.
I ran straight in the direction of the Dawson Monument. I met a man coming carrying a gentleman, and that gentleman was Tommy Corrigan. Tommy was seriously injured.
Tommy was laying on the ground outside Grayson's. He actually had the handle of the door in his hand at the time, so he was only going into the cafe.
Tommy Corrigan was taken to McIlvany's pub, which is in Church Square. So I carried on past the man that was carrying Tommy Corrigan, and I went to assist Archie Harper. With the back of his hand, he was clutching the door, the handle of the car.
And suddenly there was an evaporation of the vacuum of the air around us, and the next thing, the glass and Charlie McNally's across the street, Patsy McKenna's, and those came in and out onto the street.
The smell, and just like a ball of flames, you know, going across the road, just the bang and the silence after it, you know, and just the smoke and the smell.
I definitely parked the car and got out, and there was what was probably the engine of the car that had exploded lying in front of the Bank of Ireland on the street, sort of there on fire.
Dust, poisonous dust. The whole walls of the bank, and that they would have all shaken. And it was a summer's evening, as far as I remember. And the place was in darkness. There was nowhere. You didn't know where you were going, up the hill or down the hill. You were just completely dazzled.
People were running in every direction. One minute there was a bomb down in Church Square, and one other minute it was round the North Road, and people were running in that direction. Then they were meeting other people. And Jack Malone's cafe was ablaze. And I mean, it was a wooden structure, and it was totally on fire. And unsung heroes, and one of them men was a boy called Patsy Cairn from Tully. Patsy Cairn from Tully went over to that blazing building, and out the back of the building, it was on fire, was two large cylinders of gas attached. And Patsy Cairn's rolled one of them cylinders out onto the middle of the road to take it away from the fire. And I thought, could I have done that?
All hell had broke loose, like, you know. It was just total mayhem, you know. The cafe was on fire. People were running all over the place. Somebody shouted, there's another bomb, and everybody started running away from the pub. But the pub was in total destruction. The pints were still sitting on the bar, the pints of Guinness, half finished. But the pub, everything was just mayhem, like. over towards the bank. As I wandered around, the dust hadn't even settled. You know, I could have got this strong smell. I didn't know what it was at the time, but they tell me it was cordite, you know, after the bomb exploding. There was a piece of plate glass stuck in the bank wall between the stonework. I remember that distinctively.
So it was just a scene of devastation. And, of course, the emergency services were just beginning to kick in. And very quickly then, the area became cordoned off. It affected my mum for many years later because one of the casualties of the bombing was a lady, Peggy White, who actually took my mum's job in Greason's Bar.
Come and ambulance staff and nurses from St. Davenant's come down to give a hand, and I remember them carrying out a Mrs. White, carried her out on a door and put her into the back of the ambulance.
And then I turned the corner and that's when I saw Greason's, and that's when I realised, you know, my mom was right in the middle of that. So it was madness. They had the road blocked off, so I got to the corner just before you get to Greason's. I was trying to get in because I wanted to see what was going on with my mother. And then somebody told me that a lady had been carried out the back entrance. And so from there, I ran up to Monaghan Hospital. And that was, you talk about devastation, I mean, that was mayhem up there.
And I was standing at the front door of the hospital when the first ambulance came up. And it was a lady that I knew. And actually in Heaton's that day, I had sold her, you know, a house coat, like, we call them house coats, and it was white with navy, big navy squares in it. And I'd sold it to her that day, and she was a lovely woman, you know. She was Mrs. White was her name. And she was the first person carried to the ambulance into the hospital.
So what happened is apparently she came over to the window. She was in the second floor. She came over to the window to look out to see if my dad was coming, right, just a couple of minutes before seven. And the bomb was planted directly below that window. And just as she was looking out the window is when it went off, because from what I understand, there was a lot of glass that blew into her face and her body and whatever. So it was a devastating day. And so the last words my mother spoke to my sister, is the oldest of the family, and then there were three boys, myself and two others. And the last word she said to my sister before she went into the operating room was, "Take care of my boys." So she knew she wasn't going to make it.
I'm Seamus Keenan. At the time of the bomb, I was a porter at Monaghan General Hospital. And it was a matter of bodies coming into the hospital, into the mortuary. The other funny thing was, I remember, was they were covered with something. It was like a sugary substance on them, most of them. And I don't know whether it was part of the explosion or whether it was sealants, but it was like sugar. The other thing was there was a smell in the town, a sweet, sweet smell. Now, I don't know what that was. It's probably whatever that was used in the explosion.
We were always waiting at the end of the lane for Da coming home. And this Friday, he didn't come home. So I went back into the house, and whatever time it was, 2 minutes to seven, the windows vibrated in the kitchen. This is 6 miles away.
Paddy lived beside us at home down in Glasslough, and he had four children. And the twins were very young at the time. And he was the godfather to one of my sisters, so Daddy and him would have been very close. And I think he was talking with the wee twins before he died.
I'm Sharon Askin. I would be Patrick Askin's daughter.
And I'm Paul Askin, Patrick Askin's son. And next thing, news flash came on the radio that there was a bomb in Monaghan, and Ma knew straight away because he wasn't home. So she had to go down to the neighbours, leave us with the neighbours, and get all our neighbours to run her into Monaghan. And she was told that he was helping with the injured.
It was the priest, wasn't it, told her that? The local priest?
Uh-huh. He's all right, he's helping with the injured, but he wasn't, he was in the mortuary. He was very badly injured. He survived for 6 hours or something after the explosion. And that was that. And after that, everything just fell to
imploded.
Pot. whatever side he was sitting, whatever side the blast came in, that's the side got it, if you know what I mean. So
It wasn't good now. But and she always had money that was in his pocket that night.
She kept that money.
And it's still in the house.
It's still in the house.
And it's all,
you know, some of the coins is
bent out of shape and everything. From the force.
My name is Georgina Kent, and my father, David Parker, was in the bomb in Monaghan. And I was 12 years old when the bomb happened. But I know my uncle, they searched for Daddy and they couldn't find him. And my uncle, they said they'd have to go to the morgue. Now, my uncle wasn't of great, what would you say, nervousness of seeing dead bodies, like. But he did. My father always wore checkered Slovakian boots, which were bright yellow. And he said to the man that was taking him to the morgue, I don't need to. Have they their shoes on? And your man said, yeah, they have, of course. We haven't got really anything. Well, he says, I don't need to see anything, only their shoes. And the scene, he went round, no Czechoslovakian boots. So they eventually found him in a side ward or something in the county. He was blue over the counter. He was buying Paddy Askin, who was killed, a drink. And he had his hand put in his wallet back into his inside pocket, which left him with an injury with his arm that they couldn't get back out again. And he was blue over the counter, and all the glasses and all the bottles all embedded in him. For years and years afterwards, Daddy would feel a wee prick somewhere and he'd say to my mother, look at that. And Mummy would pick out a wee piece of glass. It would be glass. And he was one of the last to leave the hospital. I remember Daddy in the hospital. I remember my mother was saying the bed next to him was Archie Harper.
My name is Iris Hall. I'm Archie Harper, Rock Curry's daughter. So I went up through the hospital gates and got in, and the sister took me into her office. She says, who have you, dear, here? I says, my daddy. And she says, you sit here. And then it was a long sit and wasn't allowed up to see daddy. And when I asked could I go up to see him, said no. He was queuing for theatre. And then they asked me to phone Mummy, and I couldn't, so I phoned a neighbour, and the neighbour took Mummy to the hospital, and she nearly collapsed when she realised what had happened. And it was a long evening. We didn't get up to see my uncle, or my daddy. Didn't get up to see daddy until 12 o'clock that night. And us both going to town to do our own things, and this to happen, like, you know. However, daddy, he lived for 4 days, but unconscious. And each day we were down with him, staying with him, hoping that he'd come round, but he didn't. And the day before he died, he put his hand out in my hand and he opened his eyes. And the hospital were brilliant, but there was nothing could be done for poor daddy. So that was my story. My life changed that day forever. He was so close to me. I was so close to him. Went everywhere with him. My life has been horrendous because of this.
You could see, I remember taking a photograph. It was the first time I bought a camera, which was the next day. I bought it in Black's Chemist, and I took photographs the next morning of the scene. And I remember the engine, the parts of the vehicle was lying where the bus would have been, in front of the bus. Basically, that's my recollection of it, to be quite honest with you. And as for Mrs. White from Belgian Park, who died, I know the White family very well, and the devastation that family must have gone through on the loss of a mother, and particularly her husband, Joe, and indeed her children. And when I look at the like of the other families that are affected, the Travers in Park Street, the Williamsons, and indeed the Askin family, but the people that were killed in Monaghan were innocent people in the wrong place at the wrong time. But the people who carried out, who perpetrated that on the people of Monaghan town and on of the people of Dublin, they didn't carry that out without intelligence, without assistance.